What is the mystery of the faith? What's the mystery of the faith? Anybody want to make a comment on that? Go ahead, Matt.
I don't know the answer to that. Could it be Jew and Gentile in fellowship together?
You're very close. I think you're very close. Question is, what is the mystery of the faith that Paul talks about in 1 Timothy? It's a puzzle. Reason I brought it up is because I get email, and I just got one recently. I got this guy named Jeff in North Carolina, and Jeff has studied everything at our website. Man, he is a mid-acts Pauline dispensationalist from the get-go. And about three times a week, he poses a question. He sends me an email, and I notice that his emails all have a title, and I know what he's doing. He's taking my emails and he's probably categorizing them. He's going to have a topical Bible study index, I guess. It looks to me like that's what he's doing. Well, that was his latest question, and that's a question that puzzles fundamental denominational people around the world. What is the mystery of the faith? Thank you, Cindy. I want to get the whole context. Let's just get in the whole context right here. 1 Timothy 3 and 1 says, this is a true saying, if a man desire the office of a bishop, he desireth a good work. Your ministry, your work for the Lord, in that context, apparently, is directly associated with your desire. Do you see that? The things that you're involved in your service for the Lord, is directly associated with your desire. So that goes a long way toward answering the question, does God call people? Or the God-called preacher or teacher or evangelist or whatever. Y'all see that? If a man desire an office. Now look at these qualifications here. A bishop, then, must be blameless, the husband of one wife, vigilant, sober, of good behavior, given to hospitality, apt to teach, not given to wine, no striker, not greedy of filthy lucre, but patient, not a brawler, not covetous, one that ruleth well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. There's no way that Lost Keith can meet the qualifications. As a matter of fact, I've known a lot of bishops and deacons over my years, and I don't know a single one of them that could match these qualifications here. Verse 6, not a novice, lest being filled up with pride, he fall into the condemnation of the devil. Moreover, he must have a good report of them which are without. Let's see here. Thank you, Timothy. Thank you, Gracie. Moreover, he must have a good report of them which are without, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. Likewise, must the deacons be grave, not double-tongued, not given to much wine, not greedy of filthy lucre. Now here it comes. Holding the mystery of the faith in a pure conscience. And that's the puzzle. What is the mystery of the faith? You got to consider the time frame here, right? When did Paul write 1 Timothy? When did Paul write 1 Timothy? Obviously, from the context and the information, the peripheral information that we get in the book, it was written after the close of the book of Acts. It was written at a time when Paul went into Macedonia, not at the time of Acts chapter 20, but at some later time. Evidently, even after those 2 years that are referred to at Acts 28, at the end of Acts 28. Evidently, Paul was released from prison, and at some point in time, he went into Macedonia. Because, and the reason that I say that is because at the time of Acts chapter 20, in the Luke account, in Acts chapter 20, when Paul went into Macedonia, he had already sent Timothy ahead of him into Macedonia, and he even writes something about to the effect, if Timothy come to you guys there in Corinth, when he writes the Corinthian letter. So this is obviously not then the Acts 20 trip. It would have to be a later trip. And at the time when he wrote 1 Timothy, he told Timothy, as I besought thee to abide still at Ephesus. Remember that? As I besought thee to abide still at Ephesus when I went into Macedonia. So I'm trying to set the time frame for you. Now we're talking about bishops and deacons here, and the qualifications of those bishops and deacons. As far as I'm concerned, a bishop is a pastor. It's the equivalent of what Paul writes about in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 11. And he gave some apostles and some prophets and some evangelists and pastors and teachers for the perfecting of the saints. And that's the key to it. Now, I wrote an answer to this friend of mine that I correspond with in email, and he seemed to think that the mystery of the faith was that we're justified by faith. Well, we most certainly are justified by the faith of Jesus Christ, but I believe that the mystery of the faith pertains to the revelation of the mystery revealed to Paul. And it seems to me, and you guys can read it and come up with your own conclusion, but it seems to me that these bishops and deacons that Paul is referring to there in 1 Timothy were there for the leadership of the early church, which was predominantly Jewish. You notice all those qualifications there. I think that basically, like I said, a bishop or a deacon, he'd be the equivalent of a pastor, as in Ephesians 4:11. And God gave those offices. The passage says he gave some, doesn't it? It doesn't say he is giving some, right? It says he gave some. So there you go. And I think he gave that in the early church for the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come in the unity of the faith. So I believe the mystery of the faith probably has to do with that unity of the faith that Paul speaks of in Ephesians there. That seems to indicate to me, and you think about this real carefully, it seems to indicate to me that there were even kingdom saints, people who previously had been involved in Peter's ministry, and we know there's some at Corinth. We know that because Paul says there's some people there at Corinth that boast about the fact that they follow Cephas, right? So I believe that most likely during the first century there were thousands of kingdom saints, I don't know how many, who came to the understanding, who came to this unity of the faith that Paul speaks about in the book of Ephesians. They were coming unto the knowledge of the truth. In other words, they were being established in the body of Christ. I believe that most likely, perhaps there were thousands of people in the early years who had previously maybe even heard a Jewish kingdom message who eventually became members of the body of Christ. And a classic example of that would be the Roman Gentiles, wouldn't it, to whom Paul wrote that Roman letter, would it not? Now, I found a little excerpt from an E.C. Moore commentary on this. So, I'm just going to play this for you, let you hear Brother Moore's comments on the subject. You can put it together with what I said and what I showed you there, and you can come to your own conclusion, but listen to Brother Moore a minute.
I've had men, I've asked them over and over about the faith of 1 Timothy chapter 3. Look at it. This is pastors and deacons. Verse 9, holding the mystery of the faith in a pure conscience. There isn't one out of every 50 preachers and teachers that I've ever asked about it that knew what it is. The mystery of the faith. What is it? Look in Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 6. Paul is asking for prayer. Verse 19. And for me, that utterance may be given unto me, that I may open my mouth boldly to make known the mystery of the gospel. Now, the fact that the gospel is a mystery is one thing. The fact that Jesus Christ died for men's sins is in the Old Testament scriptures. And it was a mystery hid in the scriptures until revealed to Paul. But the mystery of that gospel is something else again. Hence, you'll notice that Paul writes the Thessalonian letters, the Corinthian letters, the Galatian letter, and the Roman letter. And he uses passages out of the Old Testament scriptures. In other words, Old Testament passages that make a reference to the millennium over here has to do with Gentiles helping Israel, blessing Israel. So Paul deals with that all the way in all those. In other words, he goes into a synagogue. In the synagogue, he'd find Jews, Jewish proselytes, and Gentiles that fear God. And so those that would be there would be, in other words, they would be reached, I'll put it that way if you'll allow me, through the fact that God made a promise to Abraham. He said, I'll bless you and I'll bless the ones that bless you, and I'll curse the ones that curse you. So those that blessed Israel during this period of time were blessed with the gospel. As the Gentiles that bless Israel in tribulation will be blessed by going into the kingdom. They won't be destroyed at the coming of the Lord. Well, then something happened, and Paul's ministry took a turn. So over here, he wrote Ephesians and the prison epistles. In these epistles over here, I find the mystery of the gospel. What is the mystery of the gospel? That Gentiles, such as we in this room, who had never blessed Israel, had never done anything to deserve anything good, can be saved just exactly the same as these back here and be put in the same body with them by that gospel.
Okay, that was just a little excerpt there. So you can see then that there's only one body of Christ. There's not two. There's no such thing as a hyper-dispensational Acts 28 new man that began, and you know, after the Acts ministry there. These Gentiles, for instance, these Gentiles in Ephesians, it's plain from Ephesians chapter 3, verse 6, that these Gentiles are fellow heirs, and they are of the same body, not a new hyper-dispensational Acts 28 body. See, now there are some people in the mid-Acts religion who accuse me, who accuse E.C. Moore, who accuse Scott, who accuse us of being Acts 28ers. What they say is, what I heard Mac Bible say and what I saw him type is in text, that we're Acts 28ers in Acts 9 clothing. See. Now, here's the situation. There's a lot of people in the mid-Acts religion that do not understand these distinctions. And when you go into those teaching rooms and they're teaching on such passages as the book of Galatians and certain passages in the book of Romans, they stumble over a lot of things because they do not understand that there are two groups of people involved. There are people who were involved with the nation of Israel. There are people who were in the covenants of promise. And then there are those like us and like the Ephesians who were not in the covenants of promise, but were aliens from Israel, strangers from the covenants of promise. We had no promise. And that's exactly what Brother Moore was talking about, the mystery of the faith. And those bishops and deacons in that early church, think about it now, they were predominantly Jewish. They were of that association. And the reason that those men were there were for the perfecting of the saints till we all come in the unity of the faith. I'm sorry to report, but by and large, we don't have a unity of the faith, even today. There you go, Norm. Greeks are Gentiles, but not all Gentiles are Greeks, and that's an excellent way of putting it. I mean, the King James Bible does not refer to all Gentiles as being Greeks. And it don't take rocket science. What it takes is a Bible believer. And you fellows can like this or not, but the vast majority of the writings upon which the Mid-Acts religion is based was written by men who were not King James Bible believers. Are y'all aware of that? Hello? So that's the problem. Anyway, the mystery of the faith. And that was my answer to it, and Brother Moore seems to agree with me, because I basically said exactly the same thing that Brother Moore said, not even realizing that he had made these specific statements there until I stumbled across them there and just took that excerpt out of a study that he had done some time ago.